This episode is provided by Thomas Allgaier and Frenes, based on the most relevant LinkedIn posts about AI and B2B marketing in calendar weeks 15 and 16. Frenes is a B2B market research company that supports enterprise marketing teams in unlocking the full potential of their customer data with the help of AI. You can find more info in the description.
And we are diving into something today that is just, well, honestly, a bit terrifying for a lot of marketing teams.
Right. I mean, imagine spending $50,000 to write the ultimate definitive buyer's guide for your industry.
Oh, yeah. A massive investment.
Exactly. And it is perfectly optimized. An AI model reads it, learns absolutely everything about your product category from it. And then, you know, when a user asks for a recommendation, that same AI explicitly tells the buyer to go purchase from your biggest competitor.
Which is just wild.
It's not a hypothetical scenario either. It is happening right now. And the craziest part is that your traditional analytics dashboard won't even show a drop in traffic.
It's a terrifying blind spot, really. I mean, we spent the last year in this honeymoon phase with AI, you know, playing around in the sandbox, treating it like a parlor trick to write quick email drafts.
Yeah, exactly.
But looking at the insights curated for today's deep dive, that era is entirely over. The top trends circulating on LinkedIn right now show a massive shift. We are moving from basic experimentation into serious, governed, operational execution.
And the margin for error is shrinking rapidly. So to map this out for you today, we are going to unpack three major shifts happening in the B2B marketing space right now.
Yep, lots to cover.
First, we need to look at discovery, this new battleground of AI visibility, and why traditional search metrics are breaking. Then, you know, if we assume you actually get found, we'll explore agentic go-to-market workflows.
Right, which is basically what happens when AI starts executing your outreach autonomously.
Exactly. And finally, we'll look at the fallout of all this automation, which is driving a massive return to human-led brand and content strategy.
Let's start right at the top of the funnel with discovery. Because, I mean, if the AI models don't know who you are, or worse, if they don't trust you, none of the downstream marketing even matters.
Totally.
Alex Groberman highlighted a massive shift recently when Google's John Mueller essentially confirmed that AI search visibility needs to be treated with the same severity as traditional SEO.
Let's pause on that, because for a decade, SEO has been a very straightforward transaction. You target a keyword, you rank, you get a click, and you measure the website traffic.
Right. It was super linear.
But Nancy Pazarkar and Laura Cashin both pointed out that in the world of generative engine optimization, or GEO, that transaction is completely broken. Success isn't a click anymore. It's measured by retrieval rates.
Yeah, that's a huge distinction.
I want to dig into the mechanics of that.
Yeah.
What exactly does a retrieval rate mean for a marketing team looking at their reporting?
Well, a retrieval rate measures whether an AI system actually pulls your brand's entity into its generated answer at all. In the past, Google gave the user 10 blue links and the user chose. But now the AI model synthesizes an answer directly. So if a buyer prompts an AI with, you know, what are the best enterprise CRM tools, and the AI writes a comprehensive paragraph that doesn't mention you,
your retrieval rate for that query is zero.
Exactly zero. You don't get a chance for a click because you weren't even included in the synthesized reality that AI just presented to the buyer.
Okay, let's unpack this. If traditional SEO was like trying to build the brightest, tallest billboard on the highway, is AI visibility more like trying to get invited to the right exclusive dinner parties? How do you actually get the AI to talk about you behind closed doors?
That is a phenomenal way to put it. And Salman Yosef broke down exactly how you build this structural trust to get that invite.
Okay, how so?
He pointed out that AI models don't read web pages the way humans do. They look for structured data, specifically schema markup and knowledge graphs.
Wait, can you clarify how that actually changes the model's behavior? Because schema markup sounds like a back-end web development task, not a strategic marketing initiative.
It definitely sounds technical, but it is deeply strategic. If you just have plain text on a page, the large language model has to probabilistically guess what your content is about. It has to infer context.
Right.
But schema markup gives the AI hard, structured labels. It explicitly says this string of text is a product, this number is a price, this bullet point is a feature.
Ah, so it removes the AI's need to guess.
Exactly. And when you remove the guesswork, you increase the mathematical confidence the model has in your data. You transition from being a random string of text on the internet to becoming a verified entity that the AI structurally understands and trusts.
So you're effectively pre-digesting the information for the LLM so it doesn't have to spend computational power figuring you out.
That's a great summary. And Manja Vodja recently shared a highly practical 6-step AEO playbook that builds on this. She noted that semantic headings and direct answers are critical.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But the most fascinating data point she shared was about content freshness. According to her research, 83% of AI citations come from pages updated within the last 12 months.
Wait, 83%. So if my company's definitive buyer's guide or, you know, competitive comparison page was published 18 months ago and hasn't been touched, the AI essentially treats it as obsolete.
Yes, exactly. Because these models are constantly being updated via Retrieval Augmented Generation, or RRGRUK, to pull in the most current context.
Wow.
If your competitor updated their page last week, the AI considers their data more reflective of the current reality. And, you know, it's not just your own web properties that the AI is pulling from.
Right. Antoine Nivette shared some remarkable data showing a massive surge in LLMs citing social platforms. Sure. Between March and April, citations of Reddit jumped from under 300 to over 1,100.
That is a huge jump.
Yeah, and LinkedIn citations surged significantly as well.
Which honestly makes a lot of sense when you think about buyer behavior. Buyers go to Reddit and LinkedIn because they want unvarnished, human-vetted, natural language, peer reviews.
Exactly. They don't want corporate marketing gloss. The AI is simply mirroring that demand for authentic consensus.
Which brings us to the dark side of this new search landscape and the scenario you brought up at the very beginning of the deep dive. Johnny Naster has been tracking a phenomenon he calls ghost rankings.
Oh, right.
And it is a massive threat to content marketing ROI.
Yeah, the $50,000 buyer's guide that sells the competitor's product.
Right.
Why does that actually happen? How can an AI read my content, cite it as a source, but then recommend someone else?
Well, Naster used a brilliant example tracking 25 direct-to-consumer brands. He found that a tool like Perplexity will cite a brand like Traeger, specifically their beginner's guide to grilling, to formulate its answer on how to grill.
Okay, that makes sense for the informational part.
Right, but when it comes to the transactional recommendation of what to buy, it recommends Weber. This happens because the LLM categorizes your content as an informational entity, but categorizes your competitor as a superior transactional entity.
That feels incredibly parasitic. If an AI engine is just going to scrape my top-of-funnel educational content, use it to train its own answers, and then route the actual purchase intent to my competitor, shouldn't B2B marketers just block AI crawlers entirely?
I mean, I get that reaction.
Why even play a game where the house steals your chips?
It's a valid point, but blocking the crawlers is essentially career suicide in this new environment. If you block the bots, you aren't even the informational source anymore. You vanish completely.
So what's the play then?
The strategic play isn't to hide your data. It's to ensure your offsite reputation. Those Reddit and LinkedIn mentions Antoine Nivette talked about aligns with your on-site schema, so the AI trusts you for both the information and the transaction.
Okay, so let's say we get our schema fixed, we update our content every 6 months, and the AI models finally start serving us up in their synthesized answers. The discovery problem is solved.
Right.
What happens next? How do we capture that demand without just throwing massive headcount at it?
Yeah.
That leads us into the second major theme we're seeing, agentic go-to-market execution.
This is where things move from passive visibility to active outreach. And the speed of innovation here is just staggering. Hans Decker recently broke down Instantly.ai's new sales agent.
Ooh, the workflow for that is wild.
It really is. You drop in a target website URL, and within 30 seconds, this autonomous agent reads the site, identifies your ideal customer profile, enriches the lead data, writes personalized messaging, handles the follow-up cadence, and attempts to book the meeting.
A 30-second turnaround for an end-to-end sales motion.
Yeah.
Here's where it gets really interesting. If everyone can buy these tools for $20 a month, are we just buying over-glorified send buttons?
Yeah.
If we all have the same AI, where's the actual competitive advantage?
That is exactly the hidden danger. And Keith Salins shared a cautionary tale that proves your point perfectly. He deployed an AI SDR that sent out 4,200 supposedly highly personalized emails over a 6-day period.
Wow, that's a lot of volume.
On the surface, the metrics looked amazing.
Let me guess. The deliverability crashed.
Spectacularly. It was a complete failure. And the reason why it failed is crucial to understand. The underlying data the AI was feeding on was fundamentally flawed.
How so?
Well, the agent was instructed to pull personalization from the prospect's LinkedIn activity, but the AI didn't distinguish between a prospect's original post and a simple repost.
Oh, wow. So you have prospects getting emails saying, hey, loved your deep insights on the future of supply chain. And the prospect is sitting there thinking, I didn't write that. I just clicked repost on a company update 3 weeks ago.
Precisely. It instantly destroys trust. And because the AI was using the same underlying sentence structures and syntactical cadences across thousands of emails, Gmail's algorithms caught on almost immediately.
Of course they did.
Yeah. By day three, the campaign was severely throttled. By day four, it was banished to the promotional and spam folders.
This highlights a really critical flaw in how teams are viewing AI. If everyone has access to the exact same large language models, the AI itself is essentially a commodity. So where is the actual competitive advantage? If I'm an enterprise B2B marketer, what is my moat?
What's fascinating here is that the advantage isn't the AI tool, but the data architecture underneath it. Carolyn Healy and Oren Greenberg both hammered this point home. Agents do not just read data. They take autonomous action across your systems.
Right.
If you have a fragmented CRM, outdated lead scoring, or broken UTM parameters, deploying an autonomous agent doesn't fix your process.
It probably just makes it worse, right?
Exactly. It's like hooking up a high-speed automated assembly line to a warehouse that is completely unorganized. You aren't creating efficiency. You are just producing garbage at 10 times the speed. Greenberg noted that 94% of go-to-market teams claim to be using AI, but a massive portion of them are seeing zero commercial return because their underlying data is a mess.
That makes Gabe Rogel's observation incredibly timely. He pointed out that platforms like demand-based AI are pivoting away from just building more generative text tools.
Right. They're focusing almost entirely on unifying go-to-market data.
Exactly. They're trying to build an intelligence layer so that before the agent takes an action, it actually has accurate historical context.
And once you have that context, you change how you interact with the model. Ryan Staley made a brilliant point about how top-tier teams are operating. They are no longer typing prompts.
Wait, what do you mean they aren't typing prompts? That's, you know, how you use the tools.
Not if you want operational leverage. Staley argues that if you are typing the same instructions into an interface more than three times, your process is broken.
Oh, I see.
The most advanced teams are building permanent skills directly into platforms like Claude. They are taking the complex, multi-step logic of their best-performing sales rep, how they analyze a transcript, how they identify a pain point, how they map it to a specific feature, and they were baking that logic into the system's architecture.
So you do the heavy strategic lifting once, and then the system executes it automatically at scale.
Exactly.
But there is a massive trapdoor hiding underneath all this automated execution that we have to talk about, tokenomics. Ricky Solanki and Liza Adams brought up an issue that is flying completely under the radar for most marketing and finance teams.
Oh, definitely.
When you buy traditional SaaS software, you are used to a flat, predictable monthly subscription.
Yeah.
But agentic AI workflows introduce highly variable consumption-based costs.
Because every single time the AI has to think or reason through a problem or run a background step to navigate a file system, it consumes tokens.
Exactly. Yeah. It's not like buying an unlimited metro pass for the month. It is much more like paying for a taxi. But the meter runs faster every single time the driver has to stop, pull over, and look at a map to figure out the next turn.
That's a great analogy.
Glonky shared a mind-blowing example about Uber. They gave 5,000 of their engineers access to AI coding tools in December. By April, just 4 months later, their entire annual budget for those tools was completely incinerated.
Wow.
Not because the tools failed, but because they worked so well that the usage skyrocketed.
And Liza Adams added some crucial context to that. Depending on the specific model you use, whether it's GPT-4, Claude 3 Opus, or an open source model, the token cost for the exact same task can swing by a factor of 10 to 30 times.
10 to 30 times, that is massive.
Yeah. If you have an autonomous agent iterating on lead enrichment in the background while you're asleep and it gets caught in a logic loop, it can absolutely blow your quarterly budget out of the water. You have to track unit economics at a microscopic level now.
Which brings us to a fascinating crossroads and our third and final theme. We've established that autonomous agents can burn through your budget in a weekend, and they can completely ruin your sender reputation if your data is bad.
Right.
All of this high-volume AI output is completely useless if the core message is hollow. And we are seeing a massive human-led rebellion against this blind automation.
It's a necessary correction, honestly. Sal Khanka really nailed this when observing the current state of AI-generated advertising.
Yeah, what'd he say?
He pointed out that these AI ads often look incredible, The imagery is polished, the copy is grammatically flawless, but they are failing to convert at a fundamental level because they lack real customer insight.
The hooks might technically follow a copywriting formula, but they don't actually say anything meaningful.
Exactly. They lack the strategic depth that makes a buyer stop scrolling.
I have a case study that perfectly illustrates the antidote to that generic polished garbage. Jonathan M.K. shared a massive success story from a company called ThriveStack. Like everyone else, they tried the fully automated AI SDR outbound approach.
And predictably, their open rates tanked, right?
Yep. Their deliverability suffered, and it was a total waste of money. But instead of trying to optimize the prompts to make the spam slightly better, they killed the program entirely.
That takes guts. I mean, walking away from the promise of infinite scale is hard. What did they pivot to?
They pivoted to education. They built an AI-assisted newsletter. But instead of using AI to generate cold pitches, they used it to scale the creation of incredibly high-value deep dive content.
Okay, that's smart.
Yeah, they put prospects on an 8-week nurturing track. For 2 solid months, they didn't ask for a meeting. They just educated, broke down industry problems, and provided frameworks.
Wow.
By the time a prospect finally talked to sales, they were already fully educated on the methodology. The result was a staggering 551% ROI. They stopped yelling at cold audiences and started building a relationship.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, well, this raises an important question. Is the craft of marketing actually more critical now than ever? It sounds like AI is a giant megaphone, but if your core positioning is weak, you're just broadcasting your own irrelevance at scale.
Exactly. You are just making sure everyone in your industry knows how little value you offer faster than ever before.
Yeah, precisely.
Luit Cho shared a story that proves the value of human context perfectly. He was pitching a new AI marketing workflow to a CMO who was deeply skeptical. The CMO believed their brand's tone and technical complexity were just too nuanced for a large language model to ever grasp.
How did you overcome that? Because that is a very common objection in enterprise B2B.
He proved the CMO wrong in exactly 11 minutes. But the secret wasn't some magic prompt. The secret was the context he fed the model.
Right, the data architecture again.
Cho didn't just open Claude and say, write a campaign brief for a complex software product. He uploaded their highly specific brand guidelines. He uploaded the performance data of their 3 best historical campaigns. He uploaded the raw transcripts of actual customer interviews and their internal tone of voice document.
So he essentially built a temporary knowledge graph for the model.
Only then did he ask for the brief. When the CMO read it 11 minutes later, he was stunned. He said, "This sounds exactly like us. So what does this all mean?"
It's the perfect illustration of what Kirsty Nunes has been arguing. She pointed out that generative AI operates purely on probability, not truth.
Right.
It doesn't actually understand your brand. It is simply predicting the next most likely word based on its training data. Therefore, the human intent, the clarity of your strategic thought, and the hyper-specific context you provide are the only things that matter. If you feed it generic input, it mathematically has to give you generic output.
And the major platforms are actively enforcing this reality now. Sophie Carr observed that Google's massive core update in March specifically targeted and penalized mass-produced, unreviewed AI content.
Yeah, they just wiped it out of the search results.
But at the exact same time, they heavily rewarded content that demonstrated human-validated expertise, original research, and real-world experience. The algorithms are getting significantly better at filtering out the noise.
Which brings us to a really grounding insight from Franz Reimersma. He noted that in the history of marketing, technology and data have never actually been the core problem. The problem has always been the human ability to extract the true customer's voice from that sea of data.
That is the ultimate differentiator.
Yeah, an AI can synthesize 1,000 transcripts in seconds. But it cannot feel the emotional friction a buyer experiences, and it cannot make the strategic trade-offs required to build a distinct brand position.
It is incredibly validating to hear that the human element isn't becoming obsolete. It's actually becoming the premium layer of the entire technology stack.
Absolutely.
You use the AI for the heavy lifting, the data synthesis, the schema structuring, the rapid iteration of code.
Yeah.
But the positioning, the empathy, the decision of what to say, that is where the marketer actually earns their keep. The winning model isn't AI replacing the marketing department. It is human-led AI. where systems scale execution under very rigid human commercial direction.
We've covered an immense amount of ground today. We moved from the shifting mechanics of AI discovery and schema to the hitting risks and token costs of autonomous agents, all the way to protecting the human craft of the message itself.
It's a lot to process.
It is. But before we wrap up, I want to leave you with one final thought to mull over.
Let's hear it.
I want to circle back to Antoine Nivette's data about how AI models are increasingly pulling their citations from platforms like LinkedIn, Reddit, and community forums.
Yeah.
If these models are using unvarnished peer conversations as their primary source of truth, well, what is your company's offsite footprint currently teaching the AI about your brand when you aren't in the room? If a model scrapes Reddit right now to learn about your product, what answer is it going to synthesize for your next big prospect?
That is a deeply uncomfortable but entirely necessary question every marketing leader needs to be asking their team tomorrow morning. If you enjoyed this episode, new episodes drop every 2 weeks. Also, check out our other editions on account-based marketing, field marketing, channel marketing, MarTech, go-to-market, and social selling.
Thanks so much for joining us for this deep dive. Don't forget to subscribe, and we'll see you next time.